Cindy Sheehan and other activists urge you to vote no. Look for your ballot and learn more at WBAIFightBack.org or call 917-781-0366. The opinions expressed are those of the WBAI local station board and do not necessarily represent those of WBAI or the Pacifica Foundation.
The previous program was The Minefield, heard Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Now stay tuned for Live on the Fly with Randy Credico. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
The Vietnam War and the push for U.S. involvement was a result of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. A lie. The Iraq War famously is a result of lies. Wars in Somalia are a result of lies. The Second World War and the German invasion of Poland was a result of carefully constructed lies. That is war by media. Let us ask ourselves of the complicit media, which is the majority of the mainstream press, what is the average death count attributed to each journalist?
Okay, that was Julian Assange at the top of the show at an anti-war speech in London. And, of course, Anton Karas, our theme music from The Third Man. I'm Randy Credico, Randy Credico Live on the Fly here on 99.5 FM in New York City, a special edition of Assange Countdown to Freedom. And I got to tell you something. I'm so excited about my guest today, because I had an opportunity to sit next to him. I was kind of nervous, but I had such a great time. This is last week on the 10th, like only my second public appearance in the last since the pandemic started. The last one was, I think, January 6th in front of the British Embassy on 47th Street. And it's all about Assange, both events. But I got to sit next to Roger Waters, and he was, I got to tell you something. That was so great, because you have such a great sense of humor. You made me feel so comfortable, and I thank you for that. And I want to say, I got this email from John Pilger this morning because he knew you were on, and this is what John Pilger had to say about Roger. Roger Waters is unique among great popular artists. He believes his music cannot be isolated from the epic struggle for truth and justice, of right against wrong. He not only stands up for Julian Assange, he does it with wisdom and grace and courage. There is no one like Roger. I salute him. That's your buddy, right?
Pilger, yeah, I love Pilger. I've been working with Pilger for a long, long time. In fact, I started plagiarizing his material and used that he'd made with David Munro, a great filmmaker, when I was doing my Radio Chaos tour, which was in 1987. They made a movie together, John and David, called The Four Horsemen, i.e. The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And it was about, as Pilger says, during the narration of that documentary, we are fueling wars. And I'll never forget his voice saying that thing. So he back in 1987, they were making documentaries to explain to the world that the reason that we live in a state of perpetual warfare is so that the people who make the bullets and the bombs and the planes and all the other paraphernalia that goes with slaughtering people, so they can all make a lot of money. It's not about anything else. And he's right.
That's it. In back where you grew up in Great Britain, you have BAE that makes a fortune. Here we got Raytheon, Dynamics, and all these other companies, Boeing. They're all making a ton of money off of war.
Yeah, so,
and you know, you said something in an interview with John back in January. You were on a consortium news, and you were talking about, you know, I give up. I don't give up, but I'm tired of talking truth to power. It doesn't seem to be working. It's like we're Sisyphus climbing up, and we just can't seem to get them to move. And you said it's better to preach to the choir. Is that how you feel? And I'm in the same boat at this point, because I've been doing this for 5 years.
Funnily enough, that's exactly how I feel. And that's sort of what I try and do. My brain is now going, and it's going from one subject to another subject to another subject. But one thing that you just rang a bell with is, where do my responsibilities lie? I only have one responsibility, really, as a human being, and that is to be true to the realization that I have a capacity for empathy and that that is the most important thing in my life, bar nothing else. That is the most important thing, which is why before we start this conversation, and I'm going to preempt you now, I said, Raoul Peck, Raoul Peck.
Yes, I want to talk.
Okay, so we can get, why don't we just go straight there?
Let's go right to Raoul, yes.
The new Raoul series. Peck, okay? It's a new series on HBO. Okay, now Raoul Peck is famous for having made the great documentary about James Baldwin, which was I Am Not Your Negro. If you haven't seen it, watch it. But bringing you up to Raoul Peck now, he's just finished. It's a 4 1-hour episode documentary piece. It's out now on HBO. You can see all four in a row if you want to. And it is called Exterminate the Brutes. And it is based, the title is based upon a book written by a great friend of Raoul Peck's, who is called Sven Lindqvist, who's a Swedish writer. Okay, and they became firm friends over the making of this. But basically, he is telling the real story of what has happened to all of us collectively since 1492, when the Catholic Church and the powers that be in Spain decided that it was okay to declare that the most important thing in their metaphysical and physical lives was pure blood. So they, for the first time in history, the Spanish in 1492 identified the Jews and the Arabs and anybody else who they didn't consider pure Spanish blood to be outside the limits of our empathy and our laws, and in consequence, should be subject to our getting rid of them. Wipe them off the face of Spain and, if necessary, off the face of the earth. And that was the start of it, or that was the beginning of the idea that some animals are more equal than others, and that the superior animals as it developed over the next few hundred years, the European animals were superior to all the other animals in the world, all the other human beings in the world, obviously, I mean, and in consequence were at liberty to enslave them, use them, murder them, massacre them, steal from them, plunder them, treat them as if they were vegetables.
You know,
So this documentary is an absolute must watch, and I'll say no more about it.
Just tell us the name of it again.
Exterminate the Brutes.
All right. And you can see that right now, all four episodes. And I'm looking forward to it. And it's on, not Netflix, it's on...
HBO.
HBO, okay.
It's on HBO. And what's important is, you know, I wondered who that was who kept putting his hand on my knee at that Assange meeting in New York. It was you. I recognize you now.
Oh, you got a nasty sense of humor. John Huston in Chinatown said to Jack Nicholson, "You got a nasty reputation, Mr. Geddes." I like that. So I like your sense of humor. It's great and sometimes dark, like Julian Assange. Your activism, it's amazing. I've been following your activism for years and your music for decades, but I think of four people. Dick Gregory, the great political satirist, Harry Belafonte, both of whom have been on my show, Dick Gregory Pass, Pete Seeger, and then Paul Robeson, because these artists not only were great artists, but they put everything they had, never spared themselves, to plunge into the good fight. So that's what when I'm looking at you, you're a composite. Because where did your activism come from? I know you come from working class roots. Your parents are both teachers. What drove you in this direction?
Well, you just said it. My parents, boom, there you are. End of story. My mum, because she survived the Second World War. My father didn't. My father was killed by the Nazis at Anzio on February the 18th, 1944. I was born in September 43. So I was only 5 months old. Boom, he died. But I was left with the legacy of his heroism. His heroism was not to go and kill Nazis. His heroism was to be a conscientious objector and to spend the whole of the Blitz in London driving an ambulance, because they said to him, "I say, so what's your trouble?" "Well, I can't kill people. I'm very sorry, but I'm a Christian and we're not allowed to kill people." "Can you drive?" "Yes, I can." "Drive an ambulance in London." So he did, and that's what he did. And then he joined the Communist Party and he became converted to the notion that the Third Reich had to be fought. And unfortunately, the killing of German soldiers was a necessary evil. But so he went back and he said, "Excuse me, I've changed my mind." And they went, "Good God, this chap's A, he's changed his mind, and B, he has a degree from Durham University, officer material." So he did 6 weeks basic training, and then he was commissioned as a second lieutenant in a London regiment. Flew out to North Africa, then into Sicily, and then up the road to Anzio. And a few weeks later, boom, he was killed. So it's an extraordinarily heroic story to, first of all, to be a conscientious objector, which was not popular. It's never been popular in any war, and it's one of the bravest things that a man can do, in my view. But then to go, "Oh, I've changed my mind," and go and get killed is almost unbearably heroic. That left my mum. I'm just going to go on for a minute.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you something that my mum did to me. She did two things to me. Well, she did a lot. She brought me up and my brother sort of single-handed in Cambridge after the war. But one, the most important thing she did to me, one day, I have no idea how old I was, probably 12 or 13, I was struggling with something or other, and my mother looked at me and she said, you know, "Through your life, Roger, you're going to be faced with all sorts of difficult questions and decisions. And now, when you are faced with faced with something difficult," he said, "this is my advice to you. I want you to try and do the research into whatever it might be. Find out as much as you can about the facts of the matter. Research it thoroughly. Listen to other opinions, by all means. Listen to all opinions, blah, 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 blah. When you've done all of that, you will have done all the heavy lifting. The work is over. After that, the next bit is really easy. Oh, yeah, what's that, Mum? Do the right thing.
Wow. Wow. And you have all your life.
Father. Well, we try, don't we?
You know, my father spent 10 years in prison before I was born. And, you know, I got into comedy when I was young. I was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson in 84. And, you know, I was going in the right direction, but somehow in the 90s, I just had to get away from it. And I got involved in the criminal justice as an activist against the prison industrial complex. I mean, I do it still occasionally, but that's what really formulated my future, was that seat, my father's horror stories, because he was in that prison. If you saw Shawshank Redemption, where Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman spent their time, that was the Ohio State Reformatory. And I heard nothing but, and it never left him, you know, it never, that whole experience, we all felt the consequences, although he was a great provider and a great man. And because of, you know, he was a male nurse in the TB ward, and it was 100% African American. Because of that, this second generation Italian had very enlightened views out of Cleveland on race. And so I got that combination. All right. So I'm not talking about me anymore, but you know, as far as your father, you wrote the final cut, a 43-minute requiem. Were you working on that for a long time? Were you like contemplating writing something?
It's funny you should say that, but before I move on to that, which I will, because I've told you, I'll talk to you all effing day if you want. But your father formed his forward-thinking views on race before he had the benefit of the knowledge of the research into the genome that we didn't get till 20 years ago. It wasn't till 20 years ago that finally this nugget fell into our hands, where we finally had the concrete, absolute proof that there is no such thing as race.
Exactly. You know,
it's
what?
It's an invention invented by that, in whenever I said to you, 1642 or whenever it was, you know. 1492, excuse me, in 1492. So bully for your father to have figured it out a bit earlier than the rest of us had a chance to.
There's a great book by Ian Tattersall, who's the curator emeritus at the Museum of Natural History, on race. And he proves there's no such thing as race. We all come from the same, you know, original. Yeah. From salamanders or whatever, it's we all have the same DNA to go all the way back to the beginning of time.
Well, I wasn't actually including the salamanders, but the human race, Homo sapiens, as distinct from the Neanderthals and Australopithecus or whatever, there were other kind of strands, but Homo sapiens was the form of human life that actually survived from 200,000 years ago, when we discovered them either in East or North Africa, you can take your pick, but definitely in Africa. And we are all cousins and brothers and sisters. We are all descended from those original human beings who came out of Africa. We did spread all over the world. And finally, now we can acknowledge this. And this is part of what it's a tiny part of Raoul's documentary, but it's an important part in my view.
Well, it's exactly what Tattersall said. Everyone emerged out of Africa. You're absolutely right. That's his conclusion or his research. And he's a very thorough man. He's an anthropologist extraordinaire.
Final cut.
Final cut. Final cut. Yes, let's talk about Final Cut. it's like Mozart's Requiem to his father. That inspire you?
Yeah, just a bit. Well, who, Mozart? Mozart, not so much. No, I find notes. This is the only thing I agree with anyone called Leopold about, because don't get me set off on the Belgians and the Congo and all of that, and Heart of Darkness, Conrad, and all of that. Well, you just did, but I'm going to ignore that. Yeah, Leopold. I think it was called Leopold of Austria was the one who, after Mozart presented him with a performance of a sketched out version of the Magic Flute, he said, quite good, but there are too many notes. And I have to say, I somewhat agree with him about that. I'm not a huge fan of that, you know, of that kind of period of class, though Mozart was clearly a genius and he was a prodigy. And I mean, he wrote most of this stuff when he was still drinking milk from his mother's, you know, he was about that big when he, anyway, that's neither here nor there. What were we talking about?
We were talking about the final cut.
Yeah.
How about we go to a quick break and you'll come back and you want to get that?
Yeah, okay. Sure. Whatever you want to do.
All right, we'll be right back with Roger Waters.
We were talking a bit earlier, Randy, about John Pilger and David Munro and whatever. And I was reminded, I've written a new song recently, and it's called The Bar, and it's 13 minutes long, and it bangs on about all kinds of stuff. But one of the things it does is it nods to Dylan, who was probably quite rightly left out of your list of sort of political heroes, in that he's not really that direct, and also he disavows any intention to be political whenever he talks about his songs. And we love him dearly because he did write the immortal words, "The pump don't work because the vandals took the handle." But he also wrote some other stuff. I'm just going to read you a few lines from the second half of this song that I've recorded, made a demo. And this is a reference to Dylan, obviously, because it goes, "You are my sad-eyed lady, come lay across my big brass bed. Maybe it is we who have been chosen, you and me, to point out this don't make cannonballs must fly, Bob. How long and winding is the road? How many children tugging on how many mothers' sleeves saying, look, Ma, the man ain't got no clothes. You can help them build a bomb at Raytheon, but they'll sell it on in Kalamazoo, and some crazy mother's bound to drop it on a busload of kids going to school. You can hold up your hands in denial, justify the choices in your head, just doing your job, just an innocent cog, but those little Yemeni kids will still be dead. Do I sound a tad holier than thou? Well, sure, maybe I am. I'll admit it came easy to me to resist this system, uneducated as I am. I eschewed the Bible for Ken Kesey, thought I'd try on a different hat. You see, just following orders don't come easy to me. I guess it just ain't where I'm at. It's just two more standards. And when I'm drinking my coffee in the morning and I read about all this Yemeni shit, I feel so bad for that grieving foreign dad picking through the bus that's just been hit. So on Monday, when you're walking through the factory gates, and on Friday when you're picking up your check, he'll be sitting on the curbside like the bicycle thief, but with no boy to put his arms round daddy's neck." I read you that because it springs into my heart when I hear the name John Pilger.
Yeah, you know, I've seen almost all of his films, from Vietnam, The Quiet Mutiny, all the way up to The Coming War on China, which we can talk about when we come back from this break. And we are going to take a break. And this is something special. I spoke to Nils Melzer this morning.
Yeah.
He's a fan of yours. And so so we're going to go out, WBAI, with this. And we're going to come back, Assange Countdown to Freedom, after we play this. This is Nils Melzer, who actually was trained as a classical pianist. And this is his version. It's in double speed. His version of Moonlight Sonata, which he says is misunderstood because it really wasn't a sonata to begin with, by Beethoven. It was, it was a quasi una fantasia. It was an allegro version. And that's what he plays here. And we're going to play a few bars of that, and we'll be right back for those Countdown to Freedom listeners with more with Roger Waters. We'll be right back.
Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. The CDC has designated the Delta variant of the coronavirus a variant of concern. The Delta variant, first reported in India, currently accounts for nearly 10% of coronavirus cases in the United States, according to the CDC. Health experts say the Delta variant is far more contagious and can cause more severe symptoms, including stomach pain, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, hearing loss, and joint pain. This comes on the heels of the U.S. surpassing 600,000 deaths since the coronavirus pandemic began, according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. That means about one in every 550 people in the U.S. has died from the virus. In the wake of the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery, the U.S. Senate unanimously approved a bill Tuesday that would make Juneteenth, the date commemorating the end of chattel slavery in the United States, a public legal holiday. The holiday is celebrated on June 19th, and it began in 1865 when enslaved people in Texas learned they had been freed under the Emancipation Proclamation. President Abraham Lincoln signed the proclamation outlawing slavery years earlier, but it was not until 1865 that those in bondage in Texas were freed. The measure is expected to be approved by the House. Under the legislation, the federal holiday would be known as Juneteenth National Independence Day. It would be the 11th national holiday recognized annually by the federal government. Unemployed workers in Indiana are suing the state's governor for cutting off federal unemployment benefits before they expire in September. In a lawsuit filed in state court, workers say they'll suffer without the federal benefits because they can't return to their jobs due to the lack of child care or because their employers haven't reopened. The lead plaintiff is a Goshen, Indiana resident identified who works as a certified nursing assistant, but can't go back to work because she has a baby and local daycares are full. She's receiving $449 per week in federal benefits, which will stop on June 19th unless the court issues an injunction. Republican governors in 25 states canceled the benefits before they expire, claiming people won't take jobs because the federal government is giving them an extra $300 per week. The Federal Reserve expects